Hey, everybody, and welcome to the FC Yahoo podcast. It's been a little while, but guess what? The Premier League is almost back. In the studio here in Playa Vista with me today are Joey Galino.
I am so hyped that I feel like the equipment's about to break. I'm so hyped for the Premier League.
Also, Alex Baker.
I know you guys in podcast land can't see this right now, but I'm wearing an LAFC cap and slowly raising my head to the microphone.
All right, so moving back to the Premier League. It starts on Friday with Leicester versus Arsenal, which I think we should just start with Arsenal. It's a good starting point. It's the first match. What do we make of what Arsenal's done this summer? Joey Lacazette, who are you most excited about?
See, here's the funny thing. I think Lacazette is a really good signing. Alexander Lacazette of Lyon, the striker, for everyone who doesn't know. You know, it seems like Arsenal's had this kind of interminable search for an elite striker, and he seems like the guy that's going to fill that void. He's only 5'9", but he's got great movement. He's great on the ball. He's great in hold-up play. It seems like he's going to fit really well in this Arsenal team. So I think, you know, obviously you got to look at the goal scorer as the guy that's going to be the most important guy. Like, that's why Arsene Wenger bid £40 million plus one for Luis Suarez a few years ago. That's why Arsenal's seemingly been looking for a striker for all these years that's better than Olivier Giroud, who is very good in his own right. However, I really think, and I'm not just saying this in light of the Community Shield, I thought Sead Kolasinac, I think that's how you pronounce his name.
I think Said is traditionally how you would say it, but who knows these days? Everybody's got their own pronunciation. Why don't we just call him the Tank?
The Tank, yeah, exactly. Like, that's kind of okay. Sead Kolasinac, I think, pretty sure that's how you pronounce it. He is a tank. He's a bulldozing fullback, and I feel like he kind of brings something to this Arsenal team that it hasn't had in a long time. And by that I mean he's very physical, and he wants to kind of take the fight to the opponent, whereas Arsenal has been traditionally known as like this team that likes to play more aesthetically pleasing and perhaps doesn't have that grit along the spine of the team that it hasn't had since, say, Sol Campbell, Patrick Vieira, Thierry Henry, those kind of days. So I'm certainly not saying that Kolasinac is going to be more important than Lacazette if Lacazette ends up scoring a bunch of goals. But I think the mindset, I wrote this summer that, you know, what Arsenal does around Lacazette is what's really important, not just signing Lacazette. And I think Kolasinac is kind of a step in that direction. Like, this team's got to get tougher. This team has to be ready for those rough winter months. And even though the Champions League football is out, Europa League football is still there. So there's still going to be, you know, the need for a thicker squad and like a bigger roster. And I feel like that is something that Kolasinac kind of speaks to with that signing. It was a free, but I also think it was also a good move on their part.
What do you think, Alex, is going to be the impact of them not being in the Champions League and being in the Europa League? How would you like to see Arsenal approach that competition?
I think it's a competition that Arsenal should try to win. And if you look at some of the teams we've seen, sort of, you know, Atletico Madrid and Sevilla, these teams that have kind of elevated themselves to title contenders in their leagues, you know, they've done so on the back of winning these cups and these kind of lesser competitions. But, you know, Arsenal's not really, you know, apart from the FA Cup and the Community Shield, which many people don't really feel is a real trophy, especially when your team loses it, then it's really not a real trophy, Chelsea fans. But I think Arsenal could win the Europa League. So I think in that regard, it's a chance for them to get some confidence, to get a European trophy, you know, and to assure passage into the Champions League, which I think they'll get through a top four finish anyway. But on the downside, that it's Thursday games as opposed to Wednesday games, it's a lot of travel. So it's gonna be taxing in that regard. But I also think it's, you know, the competition level in the early going in the season, it won't be that strenuous, so it's a chance for Wenger to blood some of these sort of lesser players, give the pardon me, the Iwobis and people like that a chance to start. So, you know, I think if they handle it right, that the Europa League can be advantageous to Arsenal to getting climbing back into the top four and maybe getting a new trophy that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, and I also think it might be a look in the mirror for Arsenal that'll be good. You know, this is a club that charges the most for tickets in England. It's a club that sees itself as one of the elite in Europe when recent results on the field just don't bear that out. So they drop down to this league. I think personally, you know, Arsenal is more of a Europa League kind of club these days than a Champions League kind of club. So for them to get down there and them to have, like you mentioned, a weekday trip to Greece instead of Bayern Munich or something, all due respect to Greece, you know, that might be better for them. It might ensure their survival in that competition past the round of 16. You know, I think Arsenal kind of fool itself into thinking that it can compete in Europe at the top level all at once, but you know, yeah, you get to the knockout stages, great, but you lose every time you get there. So this can kind of maybe re-energize the squad and kind of offer them a window into what they actually are and what they actually need to strengthen to get to that level.
Yeah, Arsenal's been at the table with the big guys, but let's face it, they're at the table, but they're picking up the scraps. You know, they can go sit at the little kids' table and be the whatever top dog for a season. So
It worked out well for Manchester United last year.
It did.
And kind of harping on that, do you think Arsenal will finish in the top four in the Premier League, or do you think the Europa League is probably their best way to get back to the Champions League?
I think the Europa League is their best way to get back to the Champions League. I don't think Arsenal is going to finish top four this year. I think that the squad has gotten better, but I think the complaint with Arsenal, at least on my end and some other people's, has been the team was content with where it was for the longest time because it didn't cost them anything. You know, the rest of the league kind of fell off a little bit, culminating in the season where Leicester won the title and Arsenal finished second. It wasn't a product so much of Arsenal being the second best team in the league so much as every other major club falling off. And this past year was kind of the reverse of that. You know, you saw a really like a shark infested waters, if you will, at the top of the table. And Arsenal wasn't able to compete with that because they had kind of stayed the same. So I think that if you know, the league, if Arsenal realizes that that's where it is and has to get better, then it's going to be a good thing. I don't know if they've done enough to do that this season in that regard. So I think they're going to finish just outside the top four.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree with Joey on that one. I think, especially in light of some of the other teams that they've been competing with, who basically, you know, Tottenham has stood still this summer. Chelsea, you could say they've maybe made a couple steps backwards. Liverpool's going to have a hard time holding on to their best players, and Klopp's teams, the way he plays them, trying to maintain a Premier League campaign and a Champions League campaign simultaneously, I think it's going to create good openings for Arsenal to climb back into the top four. So I'm not saying they're going to be a title contender. They surely will not be, but I do think that normal service will be resumed with the top third or fourth place finish.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think that they will finish fourth as well. I think that's probably their best avenue. Just, I mean, the Europa League round of 16 is going to be real daunting this year. but moving on, I think, you know, you mentioned Tottenham. I think it's a natural progression to just talk about what they've done because it's been so different than every other team in the Premier League. They have not spent money. They've actually sold Kyle Walker for a pretty penny, and they didn't reinvest that into anything. I mean, you look at their transfers, really just four end of loans, and they actually moved on a couple of those guys. They sold Benteleb and they sold Kyle Walker. They sold G, and then they ended up, you know, they got Fazio back and they sold him out. Where do you think Tottenham falls into this? Do you think that, you know, they're going to be playing the Champions League? It was disappointing last year what they did out there, but everyone just kind of expects them to improve on, I mean, it's hard not to improve what they did last year, but where do you think Tottenham falls in the Premier League?
Fifth place.
Alex,
so say, I'm not say just, Tottenham's day is coming again. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not just trying to troll Spurs fans.
But you are.
Are you though?
A little bit. It's convenient. That's a convenient byproduct of this take. But look, they haven't made any signings. And I know Pochettino has indicated in the last couple of days that he does intend to, but let's wait until we see it. But also, they're going to be playing in Wembley, which I think is going to be a bit different for them than playing where they're used to. And I think that we saw what that did to West Ham, who we all had high hopes for last season.
We also saw what it did to Tottenham in the Champions League. They were
sure, they're
awful there.
Arsenal struggled for a long time after moving to the Emirates. So I think that that's actually a bigger factor than people are saying. And like you said, they sold one of their best players and they haven't brought anyone in. So yeah, I think that Tottenham, look, if it works out, he sticks with the squad and they do finish top two or even top four, then yeah, we give it up to Pochettino. He's done a masterstroke, but I think it's a risk and I think it could backfire on them.
Well, I think top two, I don't think would necessarily do anything. Even top three wouldn't. I think that the fact of the matter is that Tottenham has been pretty much the best team if you look at the last 2 years of the Premier League. They've been
nothing to show for it, though.
Yeah, exactly. And so them not making any changes, to me, almost feels like Pochettino saying doubling down, or I guess tripling down, you could even say, and saying, no, we still have the best team. We don't need to go out and buy a bunch of people because we've been the best team in this league. You guys can all restructure, reform your teams all you want, but we're still the best and we're still going to be the best. They just haven't raised the trophy. And considering that squad is maturing, it's not an old team, you know? And even Kyle Walker, they already had a replacement for him by the end of last year.
Yeah.
So it was when you look at Tottenham, the way that they're set up, I find that it would be tough for them not to improve, not to necessarily improve, but at least be at the same level where they're in that title race with the top two, three teams. Now, we'll get into why they might not be, considering the spending that teams like City have done and United have done. But Joey, what do you think about Tottenham?
I think Tottenham's in a weird place because they are in a good place and a bad place at the same time. And what I mean by that is this. I will not troll Tottenham, unlike my cohort here. I will say that they've done a really good job of developing and keeping the talent that they have around. I'm not comparing this necessarily to Sir Alex Ferguson's class of 92, but you do have to admit Tottenham's signed and developed out of their own academy, a combination, a lot of really good young players who have kind of blossomed into the core of this team. And they've added around that some good signings like Christian Eriksen, Eric Lamella, Victor Wanyama. And they've you know, put together a team, as Shahan said, like that was the best team in terms of aggregate over the last 2 years in the Premier League.
Just play on the pitch. They're
entertaining. They're strong. Like Eric Dier, I confess, like he's one of my favorite players. Like, I think he's really good for them. He brings kind of this physical presence to the he's kind of the shield in front of the defense for them, and he's fantastic. And he also play.
Yeah, he's kind of a utility guy. He plug him in and he'll play, and he is right. One of the best players on the pitch every time they put him out.
Absolutely, and that this team has been really good defensively. This team, I think, had the best defense in the league by 7 goals conceded last year or something like that. And Harry Kane, obviously, up top. I know he won the Golden Boot with a little bit of or he won the scoring title with a huge explosion at the end of the year, but he's a really good striker. We all know that. Now, so all this is true. This is definitely a contender for the title this year. On the other hand, I think Tottenham is in a bad place because that's kind of it for them now. They finished second last year. They finished third the year before. You know, if they don't win a league title here this year, like, what do you start saying about them? And Pochettino, back to that point, like, the reports out of England the other day, he's putting pressure on the front office. He's coming out and saying, you know, to the administration, like, we can't contend for the title realistically unless you help us make signings. So there, he's saying to the chairman, Daniel Levy, he's saying to everybody up there, like, you've got to supply us with a little bit more. We need a little bit more to be able to overtake the likes of, you know, Chelsea, the Manchester clubs that are going to spend more. And so I'm kind of thinking, like, Tottenham's in a good place because they're really good and they can contend for the title, but they're also, like, if you don't win the title this year, if you just get Champions League, I know this, you know, to other fans, this probably sounds like a spoiled kid talking, but if you just get Champions League football again, it's kind of like, well, you're in stasis, and then you kind of run the risk of becoming an Arsenal, no offense, Alex, type club, where you're just in the same, you know, Groundhog Day thing again every year. So, I wonder if Tottenham is going to make that next step or if it's just going to kind of stay where it is or even regress. I don't expect them to regress, but, you know, it's up in the air.
You know, it's interesting. Tottenham, they don't have really a history of making successful big signings that come in and change the game for them. When they got the bail money, they invested it poorly and players didn't work out. But you look at this team and it is so good and you think if they could sort of do kind of the Barcelona model under Guardiola, when they had a good team and they'd make one really big signing every season,
right,
whether it was Ibrahimovic or David Villa, and that tended to help them that season. Spurs just don't have a knack or a willingness to do that. And this window of opportunity for them is going to close. They're going to sort of end up being this kind of Bayer Leverkusen team that sort of gets close but never quite gets there. And as an Arsenal fan, I will say it's a shame because you can't help but take your hat off to this Spurs team. They've been the best team over the past 2 seasons.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a little conflicted on that because I do think that there's some value in developing a team and watching it grow. And like I said, you know, Dele Alli, Harry Kane, these guys are not old and they're not going anywhere.
Well, they might go somewhere.
Well, yes, yeah.
Another
yeah.
season with no silverware.
Oh, fully. That's
what they got to win a trophy this year.
No, fully. But what I mean is that they have them for this year and they should improve on last year and the year before. And those guys, I mean, they've shown themselves to be top players for the league. So to some extent, I kind of look around and I think, okay, if they did spend the money, what are they trying to get? Yes, you can obviously go out and spend money and get some player that you can plug in, but does Tottenham really have that need?
I mean, that's the question. Provided they keep Dele Alli, if you were Tottenham, who would you sign?
That's what I struggle with, which is why I understand, you know, Daniel Levy possibly being like, yeah, I don't really want to spend the $50 million I got for Kyle Walker. I'll save that for another day when we actually need it. Let's say there's injuries. All of a sudden, you enter the January market and you can actually spend money. Not to mention, the Premier League TV money means that Tottenham has plenty of money to spend. Also, I mean, playing at Wembley, you know, they'll get a fair amount of money from the ticket price alone because that's a big stadium. So I know there's a lot of wheels turning right now, and we still have time to go in the transfer window. They very well may go out and buy somebody, but anyone they buy, I don't think is going to necessarily walk into the first team. So is it really going to make that big of a difference?
I do. I think they have a couple of glaring weaknesses. First of all, I think their fullback depth is not that great. Yes, Kyle Walker was sold, and Kieran Trippier can walk right into that. And then on the other side, left back, Danny Rose is really good. But beyond that, I'm not sure Ben Davies is enough. I'm not sure that, you know, that squad is thick enough to withstand the rigors of European football in addition to the Premier League, in addition to all the other domestic competitions. And the other thing they don't have, for my money, is, you know, I hate to disrespect the Moussas here, but Moussa Sissoko, Moussa Dembele, they don't have a true central mid. They don't have a guy who kind of shepherds the team and kind of anchors the team from that spot. I don't want to say the fulcrum, because I think they've got really good attacking mids. I think they've got really good defensive mids, like we pointed out with Dyer and Wanyama. But there's a couple areas, central mid, you know, fullback depth. Like I feel like they really could buy and invest in the club and actually become much better or much more improved in terms of challenging for the Premier League title.
Yeah, and then, you know, what happens if Harry Kane gets injured for 3 months or something? They don't have a lot of depth.
I wasn't
going to
say that. Yeah, right. Like, I don't know if you can directly replace Harry Kane, but I do think Jansen and especially Son Heung-min is they're good options up there. Yeah. They can't necessarily replicate his goal scoring.
Well, output, he was injured for a fair amount of last year, and that didn't seem to hurt them because those guys stepped up.
That's when he goes down, Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen, that's where those guys like shine.
And I disagree with you in terms of Dembele. I think Dembele is a fantastic player. I think him possession of the ball is amazing, and I think that's actually one of the things that kind of hurt them was whenever he was out, they didn't quite have their rhythm. I think he's a rhythm player for them and gets that entire...
Get another one. That's what I'm saying. Like, there are places...
No,
I agree with you guys.
Fully. But what I'm saying is, like, you know, anyone that they would buy right now, I just don't personally see him necessarily being the first 11 right away. Yes, I think, obviously, anyone you buy should contribute to your squad. Otherwise, why are you spending the money? But I'm not necessarily seeing the glaring weaknesses we saw with teams like City or United going into the summer. That I don't think Spurs have that. So
absolutely, I think, and this kind of speaks to your guys' point. Like, if this wasn't Tottenham, if this was Manchester something or Chelsea or, you know, maybe turn of the century Arsenal, we'd be like, oh, it's fine. They're gonna figure out a way. But because it's Tottenham, because it's Spurs and Spursy is a thing, I think like a lot of people, myself included, I'm accusing myself here, don't trust that they can keep this up. However, as you guys alluded to, and as I kind of alluded to, there's every reason to believe they're still going to be very good. So I think that kind of...
Yeah, I mean, as much as we say this is the same old Spurs, or you want to say that, they finished above Arsenal last year. And I think not just above Arsenal, well above Arsenal.
Okay. We get it.
All right, so moving on. Let's talk about Chelsea. Let's talk about the champions. I mean, they had a pretty active summer in the sense that they brought in Alvaro Morata, brought in Bakayoko from Monaco, who, you know, definitely jumped on the stage and everybody was interested. Brought in Rudiger from AS Roma. Those were their three big signings in terms of transfer fees. They also brought in backup goalkeeper Willy Caballero, who looked pretty darn good over at Man City last year. Really saved Pep Guardiola's blushes, if we're being honest. And then they surprisingly sold Nemanja Matic to Manchester United, which... I mean, there were those rumors going on, but everybody was kind of like, really? Are they going to really do this? Also, Nathan Ake went to Bournemouth. Juan Cuadrado finally went permanent to Juventus. Begovic over to Bournemouth as well. You know, Christian Atsu to Newcastle. There's a few pretty easy ones. Obviously, John Terry's gone on a free. Matt Miazga, I'm sure Joey will mention at some point. Another loan to Vitesse.
Yes, okay.
It's just kind of something that they do. Loftus-Cheek to Crystal Palace. There's been some changes, but really what stands out to me is Morata coming in and Diego Costa still being on the team, but really it seems like he's not on the team at all. Joey, where do we see Chelsea falling this year?
Emphasis
on falling.
Yeah. No, emphasis on my part on staying put, because I fully acknowledge that I'm the only one of the FC Yahoo crew who thinks this. I think Chelsea's going to repeat, and I think part of it is because the swaps that they made in the transfer market are going to make them even more impregnable and indefensible than they were last year. And by that I mean this. I don't think Alvaro Morata is a better striker overall than Diego Costa, but I think Morata will be a good substitute for Costa. He doesn't have the mean streak, but he can play in tight spaces. He's really big, so you can't really muscle him off the ball as easily as some people might think. And he's got a reputation for, you know, he's kind of been surplus goods his whole career at Real Madrid and Juventus. I think he's really going to cherish this shot he has at Stamford Bridge to score a lot of goals and kind of lead the line. And then I think the two important signings, I think Rudiger, I'm over the moon for this guy. I think he's a really good defender. I think he's going to pair well with Gary Cahill or whoever in the back. And I think that Bakayoko is a fantastic pairing with N'Golo Kanté, because I agree with the Nemanja Matic point. In terms of why did – you know, I think they should have sold him, but I'm not sure why they sold him to Manchester United specifically. Yeah. That was a little weird. Him and N'Golo Kanté, as good as they were last year, were a little bit of an awkward fit, but I don't know why they sold him to a direct rival. Either way, it doesn't matter. I think Bakayoko and Kanté are immediately the best midfield pairing in the league. The problem for Chelsea, I think, is – and the one thing that could trip them up, the squad is still not quite that deep. And I wonder if this is the same team basically. While there's a lot of Premier League title winners in the side, there's also a lot of people, it must be said, a lot of players that quit on Jose Mourinho a couple years ago. And he's kind of the same kind of manager as Antonio Conte from the standpoint of the passion, the fire. You know, you're never going to get a day off, so to speak. And I wonder, I don't think they will, but I wonder if they're not going to fold under the same circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, a couple years ago, a number of players quit on the manager. It seemed
took a sabbatical.
Sure seemed that way.
Sorry.
Excuse me.
This year, it seems like the manager has already quit on at least one player.
Oh my god! I don't get that.
I'm not sure I understand it, because you know
I don't either.
Diego Costa scored massively important goals for them to win that title. Without him, I don't think they win the Premier League last year. I know they won by some distance, but he hit so many massive goals.
Yeah.
That. You know, they were either in losing positions or at level positions. He got them points when they needed it. And week in, week out, you know, all the controversy that he was under a microscope about all the extracurriculars he does, the red cards, all that, he really didn't mess up at all. There was a little bit of a bust up with him and Conte in training, supposedly, but that got taken care of. He came back. He played fine. He kept scoring until the end of the season. And then we get to the summer, and all of a sudden they're like, yeah, he says he got a text that says he's not welcome at Chelsea anymore. We start seeing him in Brazil partying wearing an Atletico Madrid shirt. It's just all types of very, very weird stuff going on. But, you know, getting back to Chelsea going into the season, I personally think that is going to be the biggest hiccup for them. And it's nothing against Alvaro Morata. I kind of disagree with you saying he's been surplus his whole career, because at Juventus, I don't think he was surplus. I think he was so good that Real Madrid were like, no, we're going to take that clause and we're going to buy him right back, you know, because he was on loan over there and they had a clause where they could pay a bunch of money and essentially buy him back, and they did. And, you know, a year on, I think at Real Madrid, it makes sense why he's surplus. That attacking talent, no one can get into that team. I mean, you know, we're getting to the point where I think Chelsea, it's going to be interesting to see how they start the season, because I think Hazard, if I'm right, you know, he didn't play in the Community Shield. I think he's also out in the first week. I think, you know, they don't have a
he's
tough.
A little banged up. Yeah,
yeah, he's a little banged up. I think if Hazard's not at 100% in that first month of the season and they start stumbling a little bit and you have a new guy in Morata and they're still adjusting to the league, I think he'll be a fantastic player down the line. But I'm not sure that you necessarily hit the ground running on week one or month one, really. I think all of a sudden it could be kind of problematic for Chelsea.
Yeah, I agree. I think if they have a slow start to the season that they're going to be in trouble. And I'm not that convinced. I don't think they're a title contender. I'm not that convinced they're going to make...
Not a title contender? Really?
No. And wow. I'm not that convinced they're going to make top four. I think Alva Morata is a massive drop-off from Diego Costa. I know he scored goals in La Liga and in Serie A, but not against big teams, not in big games, not crucial goals. And I just think that we've kind of seen this pattern with Chelsea before where they kind of win the title and they start making bizarre decisions, selling Matic to United. You heard about conflicts between Conte and the club earlier in the summer. It's strange stuff. But here's my question for you guys. Diego Costa is still a Chelsea player.
Yep.
Is there any possibility we could see kind of a Carlos Tevez situation? Remember at City a few years ago where he was off on a golf holiday and still a City, basically just went AWOL and then wound up playing his way back into the team?
I mean,
do you guys see any possibility for that? If they get halfway through the season, Morata doesn't work out, Costa still hasn't been moved on for whatever reason, what is there any way that they could bury the hatchet? Conte
is such a proud, like, it's proud dude.
But wasn't Mancini the same? Very proud.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think that Tevez's thing was a little bit weirder because he was citing his family and all types of stuff. Diego Costa never said, like, explicitly or publicly that he, like, wanted to get out of there and had no business there. It seemed like Conte basically just quit on him, and he's not in any interest in bringing him back because if he brought him back, that would kind of hurt his power.
Right. I think I look at it this way, in the prism of another dust-up elsewhere in Europe this offseason, or from this past season that's kind of manifested itself in this offseason. Like, you know, there was Conte and Costa clearly didn't get along. However, I don't know if it's that dissimilar to Max Allegri and Leonardo Bonucci at Juventus. So the thing I'm trying to say is, like, you can never read too much into it unless you're behind the scenes, because for all the world, like, you'd think, like, oh, Allegri and the one of the best defenders in the world would be able to work it out. Then you see Juventus sell him straight to AC Milan a few weeks ago, and Costa, as you mentioned, is still with Chelsea. So I don't know if they can. It seemed like that was more contentious than the Juventus situation, but it seems like I was apparently mistaken. So I don't know for sure. And I do think what you mentioned in terms of the chaos of Chelsea is a good point. Like, the fulcrum, I wrote about this, the fulcrum of Chelsea in the Premier League era has kind of swung back and forth, you know, violently. Like, they win the league title in 2010, and then they have a drop-off. They finish sixth the year they win the Champions League. They finish sixth in the Premier League, but get back into the Champions League because of that victory. And then they go back and rise up again under Jose Mourinho, win the league in 2015. Then they finish 10th. Then they win it again last year. Like, this is kind of what they do. And
it's not stability. It's not consistency.
It's not stability.
But it's success.
Well, I think it is consistency. I don't know if stability. I think it is. It's not stability, and I think it is consistency from this point. You know, they've got a lot of match winners. They've got a lot of Premier League medal winners in the side. And they've won five times since they won their first. And I think Manchester United has won five times. And obviously that was, you know, already a few years removed from that. So I'm saying, like, Chelsea is kind of the safest bet no matter how violently they swing. Like, everybody wants to talk up Man City, and we'll get to that in a second. But they haven't won the league in 3 years, which is an eternity for these kind of big spending clubs. So I guess my belief in Chelsea is founded in these players, this manager, and also the track record they have of, if they don't flame out wildly, they're going to win the league, basically.
I'm just impressed by you referencing Serie A. This is incredible.
You've converted me. What do you want me to say?
And we're losing listeners by the second.
I apologize.
All right, so moving on, because you know, we don't want to spend all day on this one. Let's move on to Man City. You mentioned them. They've had an active summer, is the best way to put it. An expensive summer is another way to put it. Benjamin Mendy, the most expensive defender of all time. Kyle Walker comes in from Spurs for big purse, like we mentioned earlier.
Too much money. Sorry.
I tend to agree, but that's just kind of where we're at. Bernardo Silva, who actually costs less than Kyle Walker somehow, he comes in, and I think he's a heck of a talent. Ederson, who looked really good the little bit that I've seen him. He's a Brazilian goalkeeper. And then Danilo, who, when Pep Guardiola was here, kind of explained that he's a right back, but he can also play left back. And he said he referenced him playing some central midfield as a holding midfielder kind of with Brazil as well. So he's kind of a makeshift utility on the left and the right, and maybe even a defensive midfielder is what Pep imagines it being. So they've really reinforced on that end. And in the process, they've gotten rid of Kelechi Iheanacho, and that's really the biggest loss that they had, so to speak. Obviously, Nolito moved on. Kolarov, they moved on. Joe Hart back out on loan. They actually sold Joe Hart. Loan fee. They took some money, but loan fee.
To the club he's always loved.
Yeah. Jesus Navas leaves. Gael Clichy leaves. Pablo Zabaleta leaves. They got rid of a bunch of older players that weren't really mixing it, and they created a really good young team. And even Gabriel Jesus, he only came over in January. This is his first full season. When you look at the way this team is structured and set up, they look pretty darn good. For me, I actually take them to win the Premier League this year. They're my number one team just based on the fact that, man, the style that Pep has these guys playing and the speed at which they play and the possession with which they control the ball, I think that as much as they may lose to the odd Chelsea match or the odd United match or even, draw those, I think when they're playing those lower teams, the bottom 15 or the bottom 10, if you will, I don't think those teams have a chance of even getting a point from these guys because they're just too damn good, frankly. What do you guys make of what City's done this summer? What do you expect from City? Do you think that they can compete in Europe? I mean, they genuinely look like they're building blocks to win the Champions League title, if not this year, but going forward.
Yeah, I picked United to win, and I still stick by that. But when we were doing our previews and we were getting assigned who to write for and against, I got assigned to write against City. And I'll tell you what, it wasn't that easy to do. There's not a lot of discernible weaknesses. And I'll say this, United, I feel like, is a team that was built to win the Premier League. It's a big team. It's a strong team. It's powerful. This City team seems like it could seriously compete on both fronts, on the Premier League and in the Champions League. If I'm going to look for a weakness, I'm going to say, okay, you've made all these great signings, and yet somehow we still have a team that the spine of which consists of Vincent Kompany and Yaya Toure, who both know they're getting a bit older. Kompany's been injury prone. if Kompany gets injured, who's the next choice? Starting center back? I just think it's a drop off. But that said, I do think that what they've done, they made the right signings. They've got players in, fullbacks who can play in that kind of Guardiola way and make overlapping runs and can play the ball. And I think from what we've seen in preseason, that City's going to be, they're going to be right in up there. And I it's going to be between the Manchester teams for the title.
I mean, preseason, I'll jump ahead. I'll just say preseason is tough to take anything away from. I've noticed this over the years of watching preseason because those teams all come out here. We watch them play. Some of them look fantastic. And then you get to the season, you're like, what happened to that team? However, the way that City played against Real Madrid and just played them off the park, just embarrassed them at the LA Coliseum, it was staggering. I mean, you're talking about playing the champions of Europe and, back-to-back Champions League winners, La Liga champions, really the best team in Europe, hands down, by most all accounts. And they just demolished them. And it was about style. It was the way that they were playing. And frankly, City played with Aguero along with Gabriel Jesus and really didn't even bring in Sané or Sterling until later in the match. They don't play their best with those two playing together, in my opinion. I think that Aguero, frankly, should be sitting on the bench. I think that front three should be Jesus, Sané, and Sterling. And, I know there are a lot of people who think that Sterling's on his way out. Fine, Bernardo Silva, real big drop-off there. I mean, it's not. And then, you have David Silva, still quality, one of the best midfielders, creators. And then, you know, De Bruyne is the level of talent that this team has. And so, like, you can say, okay, Yaya is not being asked to do the types of things that he was earlier in his career. He's really asked to be that deep quarterback player now where he just distributes the ball and keeps possession. And the way that City keeps possession, I mean, it is a different level than anything I've seen in the Premier League. Possibly ever. I mean, it's Arsenal on crack, because Arsenal was trying to be, Arsenal was trying to do the Barcelona thing, and Pep came into City and overnight. I mean, okay, overnight's a little bit of a step. Yeah. It took a quarter over of $1 billion dollars, but yeah. But he still managed to. And you know, I wrote a column about this, and yeah. I'll reference it simply to say that in talking to Pep when he was here, you could tell that these signings he's making, he's aware of how expensive they are. But his logic and his thinking is these signings aren't to win this Premier League this season. It's to create this team that will be good for the next 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. And the players he's signing, I mean, you know, they're 21 years old, 20 years old, 22 years old, 23. These guys aren't going to go anywhere for a while. They're all on 4 or 5 year deals. And the level of quality is undeniable. You can't watch these guys play and say, oh, they're not good enough. No, they're good enough. And they should get better. So for me, even if City doesn't win it this year, it's kind of one of those things where I would bet on them every year for the next 5 years.
Yeah, that's. I think there's a lot to unpack here based on what you guys said, and I think everything you said is right. For me, the reason I don't think that they're going to necessarily win it this year is because the investment plan is so clearly not just in the now but for the tomorrow. There's a lot of players that are going to be incorporated in the side, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. That doesn't mean you're not going to win. But, you know, when you talk about the finer margins of the upper crust of the Premier League, I'm not sure it's going to – I'm not sure they're going to be able to overcome the rest of the league. And I'll tie that to the other points that I want to make. And I agree with you. I think the big signing that they made was not necessarily anybody over this summer, although I do like what they did in the transfer window a lot. Gabriel Jesus, if he gets a whole season up top instead of being hurt, like, what, 3 weeks into his Manchester City career, whatever it was, like, he is going to be, you know, it's crazy to say, like, but I think you're right, Sean. Like, you're putting Sergio Aguero on the bench, and you're absolutely justified in doing so. And it's nothing against him, but the combinations that he has to play with, Pep Guardiola, that is, with, like, everybody in the attack, like, you guys mentioned it, De Bruyne, Silva, Bernardo Silva, it's just the attackers that they have, and then the strikers that they have, Jesus, Aguero, Sané, Sterling, like every attacker, it's kind of like this jigsaw puzzle you have to put together every week. I do agree with you, Alex, a little bit that the spine of the team is not as strong as other ones in the league, but I do think that if nothing else, the signings they've made in defense will help, you know, because, you know, God knows Stones and everybody back there looked a little lost last year. Claudio Bravo did not replicate the country form he did with his club. But the other point I want to make kind of is this. There's a couple disturbing things here. So I think, you know, ultimately my point and what I was just trying to say is, like, a lot of this is on Pep Guardiola in terms of the combinations that he chooses and the management of the team that he has. This is a little disturbing to me. Everyone talked when he moved from Spain to the Premier League saying, like, oh, well, he doesn't have the winter break. You know, it's much more of a grind. And, you know, part of that is lip service. We all agree that he's an all-time great manager. But City lost 5 games last year, 5 matches, and 4 of them were in a month and a half stretch from, like, December to January. And you could say, like, well, okay, that's, you know, a natural kind of regression that a lot of teams have. Yes. But let's also take a look at, like, the games that they dropped points last year. They lost at Tottenham. They tied at home to Everton. They lost at home to Chelsea. They lost at Liverpool. They lost at Everton. They drew at home to Spurs. They drew at home to Liverpool. They drew away to Arsenal. They lost at Chelsea. They lost it, or they drew at home to United. Like, the team wasn't that good. They were actually pretty bad against the best teams in the league. And they can beat up on the dregs of the Premier League as much as they want, or the 7 through 20 clubs as much as they want. But to win a title, again, in the margins that are this fine, you can't have that kind of record against the best teams in the league. And it's like, I know it's a different team, but it's just there's some warning signs there where I'm kind of like, I'm not sure that I have the full confidence. Just because it's Manchester City, kind of as I alluded to earlier, with Pep Guardiola, both of which I think are really good, the club and the manager, I'm not sure I can give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I think, Joe, you got to the the heart of my concern with Pep, and I'm a huge Guardiola fan, but last season we saw some tactical inflexibility from him, the whole we don't do tackles thing, and I just wonder if that's going to come and bite this team and undermine them against a guy like Mourinho, who will do whatever it takes to win the team. Guardiola's going to stick to his guns. He's going to try to outscore his opponents, which worked fine in La Liga, and it worked fine in the Bundesliga when there were no teams really that could touch the teams he was managing. But in the Premier League, that's pretty dangerous when you're playing Tottenham.
All right, so I guess we'll move on, and the natural progression from Manchester City would be to go to Manchester United. Now, Alex, you have them winning the league. I have them finishing second.
This I want to hear.
Yeah, I have them finishing second, and it's tough because the Jose Mourinho second year, it's tough to go against. I just, you know, anyway, we'll get into this in a second. Let me just recap real quick. They went out, and they really had three major signings this summer. Romelu Lukaku came over from Everton for a ridiculous fee. A shade under $100 million if we're using American currency. Nemanja Matić from Chelsea, who we talked about earlier. And then Victor Lindelof, who's a central defender, a spot that they had to kind of shore up. Really, all three signings were in positive positions. Mourinho, when he was here and, you know, I got to go to the press conference and everything, he said he really wanted four signings. And the talk has been about potentially bringing a left back. That's kind of the area they want to shore up. But other than that, it seems like they've gotten everything they wanted to. In terms of departures, Adnan Januzaj finally got sold off. Wayne Rooney to Everton is kind of the big one, but I don't think anyone's looking at that as a negative at Old Trafford this year. So let's hear your reasons, Alex, even though I have an inkling of why you're picking United to win the league. Why do you think Manchester United is going to win the Premier League this season?
I mean, I realize this is a team that finished, what, sixth last season and looked kind of awful yesterday.
Did the mini treble.
Yeah, they did do a treble. Not the treble, but a treble.
A treble,
yeah. It didn't look good against Real Madrid yesterday, not particularly.
Neither did Barcelona a couple of years ago against Athletic Bilbao.
No, let me just add the caveat that I think the UEFA Super Cup is one of those where it really doesn't matter. I mean, I've seen in the past where at 60 minutes, managers just pulled their players off anyway.
Right.
And the way that United was playing, they were still doing that testing three in the back in the first half and looked awful. They went to four in the back and it looked better. But generally, that Super Cup means less. I personally think all Super Cups are pretty generally meaningless. I think in Germany it's a little different when it's Bayern Dortmund, it means more. I think in Spain, what we're about to see with the two Clásicos, those tend to meet more. Sure. But the Community Shield is usually pretty meaningless.
Hey.
It is.
First trophy of the season.
Yeah, but in any case, go on.
Well, I think for me, the key signing at United this summer is actually Nemanja Matić. And I think the reason for that is because I think that he's going to define Pogba's role and free Pogba up. And I think that now that he's had sort of a season to settle in, some of the heat is off of him because of his exorbitant transfer fee has just been blown out of the water by Neymar's. And that's, I think, something that he had to sort of carry the weight around with last year.
I mean, Lukaku almost cost as much as Pogba.
Lukaku almost did, yeah. So I think we're going to see Paul Pogba, the real Paul Pogba this season. And I think in Lukaku, you know, Zlatan did a fantastic job last season leading the line. But you're going to have a young striker in his prime. And I think this is the signing of Lukaku's career, potentially. This is a chance for him to really make a legacy and be that sort of great striker we've been waiting to see him become. So I think for me, a lot of it is lining up for United anyway.
Yeah.
You add to that the weird Mourinho second season mojo, and it just... I think that's why, you know, it's definitely between them and City, but I think that Mourinho has that Premier League experience of what it takes to win a title, and I think he's got the team he wants this season, and I think that they're going to edge City.
Yeah, he has a hungry team, I will say that. They definitely look like they want the experience of winning a title, that they're willing to listen to him to get it done. That and you know, I think you're winning the Europa League kind of played into that a little bit, because he did guide them all the way past the finish line, has them in the Champions League as well. In terms of Pogba, I'm one of those few people that just genuinely didn't think he was that bad last year. I think he had a few games where he wasn't good. But for the most part, I mean, if those shots don't hit the woodwork and actually go in, because he hit the woodwork seemingly every other match. If those go in, they're down, you know, a quarter inch lower.
Sure.
We're talking about him being one of the best scoring midfielders in the league, if not the best scoring midfielder in the league. So I think I do agree. I think Matic's signing helps out, but I don't think Pogba in particular was nearly as bad. I think he's going to get better with age, obviously, and I think it's more defined. He's going to be more comfortable. But I think I have them finishing second. It's not like I'm expecting them to crumble. Joey, why do you not have them winning the league?
I have them finishing third, too, so I don't want this to come off as some, like, you know, lecture on why United is terrible. But I just, you know, I love the center of this team. I think that Lukaku, while he doesn't necessarily fit at a lot of big clubs, I think he fits kind of what Mourinho wants to do perfectly, especially in the Premier League with how physical he is, with how good he is in tight spaces. You know, you talked about with Costa earlier, the ability to manufacture a goal out of nothing. I think he's good at that. Maybe not at the level of Costa, but I think he can definitely win points for United that way. I like the midfield. I agree. I think Matic is a better fit alongside a Paul Pogba than he was in N'Golo Kante, for example. And I'm not trying to compare. I know Kante and Pogba's games are a little bit different, but I think that pairing
just
is very
a little
good.
Bit.
Just a yeah. little bit, yeah. yeah. Just an emphasis on little and tall, too. I think the center half, I think, you know, for as much as United was kind of in chaos seemingly last year in certain respects, you know, they gave up the second least amount of goals in the league. And I think Eric Bailly in his first year rarely put a poor foot forward. I think Lindelof is a good signing back there. And De Gea is obviously a great goalkeeper. So I love the center of the team. I just wonder if they can really do much outside of that. You know, I'm a Juan Mata fan. I think that their fullbacks can kind of, you know, Valencia, Young, there's a lot of speed out there should they choose to employ it. But I wonder if they're going to be really compact. And while that will serve Mourinho well away from home, because that we all know that's kind of like how he likes to line up, especially in big matches. You know, he likes to nullify the risk of his side when another team's attacking him. I wonder if that's going to hold them back a little bit when it comes to beating the bigger clubs at home, because this team, it's kind of clear where you have to attack them, and that's out wide. I think there's a lot of wing players. For as much, you know, as much stuff as the Premier League gets for not being a aesthetically pleasing league, I think there's plenty of players out wide that can be very entertaining and can be very threatening. I think they're going to like pull that off against this side a lot. So I think there's enough pitfalls there for them to finish third, maybe second, if things break the right way.
I mean, I think we'd be remiss not to mention Marcus Rashford when we're talking about...
He's a good attacker out wide.
Yeah, exactly. He's a good attacker out wide. I think Lingard works hard as well. And I think Martial in preseason, like we said, we can't put too much into it, but he's looked really, really active and aggressive in preseason. It seems like he understands that his position is under threat, especially with somebody like Lukaku coming in. So you can't really have Rashford squeezing into the center forward position as much. I think that they do have, attacking-wise anyhow, a decent amount of depth on the wings. But I think we're getting to the point where United in particular, I don't think that they're as weak as most people would imagine them to be. And I think that really the reason that we had those low goal scoring, the conceding, was negative football. I mean, it's Jose Mourinho. You're going to get a lot of that. And I think... It's a matter of Lukaku coming in the prime of his career and just being a pure goal scorer and scoring goals in those draws where they actually did hold the ball against lesser teams. Ultimately, that's what ended up costing them was they had way too many draws. It wasn't like...
Right.
And even when they were, you know, they fluffed a bunch of chances that they really shouldn't have been fluffing on a regular basis. That's really... I think that's what they have addressed, which is why I think they're going to be in the top two. All right, so we're gonna get into Liverpool real quick. This is gonna be speed round, especially because it might not mean anything when Philippe Coutinho is sold to Barcelona any minute now. But yeah, I mean Liverpool.
Checking Twitter, spelled yeah. Liverpool.
Liverpool. I think the quick takeaway is that Mo Salah has come in, and for me, he is a fantastic player who fits in perfectly with the Jurgen Klopp style of play, which is attack. Right off the take the ball off the defender's feet, take it off in their half, and just get on the break immediately. And Mo Salah can not just score those goals, but he can create those goals, and he's got incredible speed. Where do you guys see Liverpool finishing up?
I think they're going to finish outside of the top four. Like last year was really good for them. And it's kind of hard for me to justify this because Klopp is one of my favorite managers. I think he does a really good job. I think that they're going to be only more comfortable in his system this year. But if Coutinho leaves and you leave and that playmaking void is left behind, you know, I just think it's going to be a problem. And I also wonder, like, the peak Klopp sides that we've seen, I think everyone would agree, were the Borussia Dortmund sides that won the Bundesliga in 2011 and 2012. And I just I look at those sides and I see up top there's kind of like a bottle cap for that, for all the attacking, for all the pressing, for all the work rate in the midfield and things like that. The bottle cap was Robert Lewandowski. Does Liverpool have someone like that? I'm not sure Firmino is that guy. I'm not sure that, you know, they have kind of that out-and-out goal scorer. They've got a lot of great wide attackers, a lot of guys who can link up well. But can you get a top-four finish without that kind of striker? You know, you look last year, who finished top-four in the Premier League? Harry Kane did. Diego Costa did. The combination, as we mentioned before, of Sergio Aguero and Gabriel Jesus did. You know, those are the kind of teams that are finishing top four. So unless Liverpool kind of solves that, it's sort of like, it's kind of weird for me to say. As much as I believe in Klopp, it just doesn't feel like a complete puzzle yet at Liverpool, especially if they lose Coutinho. And the defense, while, you know, it figures to be better with just consistency, they only made one signing in that regard. I think Andrew Robertson from Hull or something like that.
That's correct,
In the offseason or in the summer transfer window. Like, I wonder if they're going to be able to score enough to nullify how much they're going to give up, which they did give up their fair share of goals last year. So it just this combination of like faltering factors, I think they're going to finish just outside the top five or the top four.
I'd say Coutinho or no Coutinho, they finish outside the top four. And my reasoning for that is that Klopp's style is demanding. His team's got a winner break in Germany. They don't get one here. He's going to have to compete in the Premier League, the Champions League, and the Cups. And I just don't think he has enough depth to do that.
Also worth mentioning that Lucas Leiva has finally left the club. They sold him to Lazio.
After forever
and an unmentionable number of injuries. It's just you feel bad for the guy, but
absolutely.
But you know he was a club servant. They did treat him right on the way out, but he has finally been moved on to Serie A, where I'm sure everyone will watch him every week. All right, well, I guess it's time for us to wrap up. It's time for us to go and get to work on these articles so you can digest the Premier League opening weekend coming up. So for Joey Galino, for Alex Baker, this is Shahan Ahmed with the FC Yahoo podcast.
I'm so hyped, I'm about to break the microphone.
All right, stop real quick. You were too hyped, and you actually did break the microphone.
I'm sorry.
Let me turn your levels down a little bit.
We should put that on the outtakes.
The blooper reel's great, yeah.